The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. It was quite a wet and windy start to the morning there this morning, but it's clearing away now for everyone that's planning their last minute shopping today. It is going to clear away and it'll be nice and dry, so get out and buy local. We did most of the shop yesterday, military precision. My God, was a tough day. I'm not a big man for shopping, but we got a lot of it done yesterday. We're still kind of behind a little. I tell you, Christmas, I don't know, I always say it every year, but it's really creeped up on me this year. On the programme this morning, we're going to be having some very special guests because we have a very special Christmas programme. We'll hear about Christmas traditions and the history around the county of Christmas and traditions down through the years. We'll also have another episode of An Artist's Kingdom, this time featuring Tralee-based artist Cathy Cronin. If you want to get in touch with us, you can call us on 066 712 3666. You can text the WhatsApp 083 300 3300. I'm particularly interested in your own traditions that you do at home. Let us know, get in touch with us, and maybe they're traditions that have been handed down for generations, maybe they're new ones you've created. Let us know all about that. I'm very interested to hear all about that, because this will be my first Christmas as a dad, and it'll be my first Christmas without my dad as well, so it'll be very mixed kind of emotions. But I'm interested in maybe starting new traditions, so let me know, is there anyone you think that'd be a good one for me? 066 712 3666, or you can text the WhatsApp 083 300 3300. Also, if you're home for the Christmas, get in touch with us. We'll say hello to you. Maybe from far off, far flung places, you're home. Let us know, and we'll say hello to you on the program. Joining me in studio for this special program, we have my former student, now just graduated, John Davis, graduated from the radio podcasting and journalism course, Kerry College and Radio Kerry, which Connie Broderick and I are a tutor of. John, you're very welcome into studio. How are you?
Absolutely delighted to be here, Joe, and thanks for welcome. And to everybody listening, of course, a very good morning and happy Christmas to everyone, Joe.
Yeah, happy Christmas to you too. The course is finished now. How did you find it?
I miss it, Joe. I really do miss it. An absolutely phenomenal course. And of course, I have to say it, yourself and Connie, absolutely phenomenal. You set the standard. And for something that I wanted to do so long in my life, to get a chance and an opportunity to do it, very grateful. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant and loving it. And still working, of course, doing projects, working on a project at the moment for Radio Kerry Lessons, and also people listen out in the new year that's coming your way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a challenge. You know, it's one of those things, I thought it'd be easy, I'd come to it naturally, but I had to work on it. But anything that's easy is not worthwhile, and this was certainly worthwhile.
Yeah, well said. Christmas, are you a fan?
Oh, absolutely. Christmas is a must do, have to. But like, I have to say, I'm in awe of you. When you say you had everything done in a military position, I'm very much lastminute.com and yeah, full panic stage in the middle of next week.
Oh, there was panic, and I found that. I thought that was last minute, even though I remember when we were young, when we do the Christmas shopping, it was always Christmas Eve. When you think about it, it was mayhem, like. We do a Christmas Eve day kind of thing, and then we'd have a salad. But I'll be talking about your traditions a little later on, but we have a very special guest on the line who we'll get to know, historian Tom Dillon from Listowel. Tom, you're very welcome. Happy Christmas to you. How are you this morning?
Happy Christmas, Joe, and to all your listeners as well. I'm great. Yeah, thanks very much.
Where do you want to start here when we're talking about the history of Christmas and traditions?
You know, it's hard to know where to start. There's so many of them, really. Like, and I sat down there yesterday after you rang me, and I was trying to list them out, and there's just so many of them, you know, ones that are there for years and years, and ones that are new, because like you said, they are traditions of the whole time, new ones of the whole time, staff them, you know. So like, we've so many of them there now, like between Christmas Day swims and Christmas jumpers and all these different things, like, you know, just have to keep up with them. Like, there's so many of them there.
Yeah, I suppose like the big argument is that it's become so materialistic Christmas, but then some of the traditions have been there forever, and especially in this county, like when it comes to the Wren, for instance.
Yeah, the Wren would be a big one. Yeah, would be a big Christmas tradition for generally on St. Stephen's Day. But it was always in my own locality that they would start actually and do their home neighbourhood. The Wren boys would do their home neighbourhood on Christmas night, and right. then they'd go out to the broader field on St. Stephen's Day. Years ago, they used to even cross the river in the river field in a boat, and they'd do maybe where I'm from is in a Smore, so they'd go across into the Dyshirt area and do all that area as well, like on St. Stephen's Day. Then. So that was it. And, you know, actually, like the Wren is a very, very old tradition. And part of the Wren was that when they would, going back a long, long time ago now, maybe the late 1800s, when they did have the Wren tradition, they would actually kill the bird and they would take it around then attached to a holly branch. Mm. And they would take that then into people's houses. And the holly was very much a tree associated with Christmas. And people would cut branches of the holly or sprigs of it, and they'd decorate their houses with it. And they'd hang it up and over pictures and maybe over the doors, and especially around the crib as well.
Yeah. To hunt the Gaedroleen, which is in the Bays of Barna Shrada, that's what they were doing. They were out hunting the Wren, basically, yeah.
To hunt the Wren, and there's a very interesting story, but there's a few stories about how it originated. You know, the Wren was the king of the birds, and because they had the story was that all the birds had a parliament, and they wanted to know which one of them would be king, so they figured out whatever bird would fly the highest would be the king of the birds. So the eagle anyway flew higher than all of them, and what he didn't know was that the Wren was hiding away under his feathers. So when he flew as high as he could, and he could go no higher, the Wren popped out and flew on higher again. So the Wren kind of became the king of the birds, kind of almost by cheating. And that's very much an aspect of its character that is reflected in the stories about it, that it's almost like a deceiver. It was meant to, why it was hunted on St. Stephen's Day, was that St. Stephen was meant to have gone into a cave hiding from soldiers that were trying to capture him. And the Wren started chirping near him, and that gave away his hiding place. But then there was another very old story as well then that was linked in with the Earls of Desmond and the time of the Desmond Rebellions, when the English troops were going back to West Kerry, back to the siege at Dunanore. They were camped in Glownagalt, they were just outside Tralee, and the Earl of Desmond's troops were trying to creep up on them.
Yes.
And there was a drummer boy, a sentry, he had fallen asleep, and there were some crumbs up on the drum. And the Wren landed on the drum and started pecking his, woke up the sentry, and he saw the Earl Desmond's troops then coming, and he was able to wake up the English troops, and they were able to fight them off. That's one of the stories, and that's actually a story that's replicated in different parts of the country as well, with different characters. It's set in different times, let's say, but that's why the Wren was kind of was meant to be hunted as well, and taken around on St. Stephen's Day. So.
Yeah. I have a story about the Wren, like, which we used to do the Wren always, and like that was kind of our trick or treat or Halloween, really, because you dress up in all the different masks and things like that. But we actually had a Wren. No, we didn't hunt him or kill him or anything. I think he died of natural causes. He showed up at our yard, we found him, and we used the same one for a few Stephen's Day. We used to put him into the freezer, but I think his head started to fall off and everything. It was becoming like Halloween, really. But there was, like, we used to play music and things like that, but there was a poem you do, the Wren, the king of all the birds, St. Stephen's Day, was caught in the forest, up with the kitling down with the pen and a penny or two to bury the Wren. But that we used to find that was kind of a cop out too. If you couldn't play anything, you could do that, you know, or you could bang the biscuit tin. Just in relation, like, I know you contributed to a documentary we're producing about the Feel River and things like that. And people based along the river, sometimes it wouldn't be the turkey they'd have for Christmas. It'd be a fish or it'd be a salmon or something like that as well.
Generally, Joe, like years ago, what I used to always hear them saying was that they never ate the salmon themselves, the fishing families, because, you know, it was just too valuable.
Yeah.
I'd rather sell it and get the money. What I used to always hear them saying at home is that they'd have a goose, like, for Christmas dinner, and then later on, turkeys, like, people would keep them, and they'd be killing them. I was talking to Mendes Eltonode last day, and he was telling me about how his mother used to keep turkeys for Christmas as well, and they'd kill them, and they'd sell them into neighbours and whatever, like, you know. So, I mean, that was always a big thing, like, about Christmas as well, was feasting, like, you know. And I suppose we forget it nowadays, like, that you have Lent there before Christmas, before Easter, you've Lent before Easter, and you have Advent before Christmas, and that was all about a time of preparation when people would be preparing for Christmas, and they wouldn't have treats, and then there would people used to fast as well on Christmas Eve. Years ago, I used to hear my grandmother often talk about that. And
really,
they go to mass. Yeah, yeah, they go to mass, and then they'd have maybe a ham cooked in that easy when they come home for mass. I don't know if it was midnight mass now, because that's another Christmas tradition. But they go to mass Christmas Eve, and they come home, they'd be able to eat then after that, and that was all part of it. And you know, there was I suppose some of the other Christmas traditions as well. Then would be like I was saying earlier about the putting decorating the houses with the holly. See, there's so much symbolism about all these things. The holly was an evergreen tree, and that was symbolic then of like everlasting life and immortality, and the red berries were meant to represent Christ's blood as well.
Yes.
So that was all part of it. And like we have that in our Christmas trees as well, like, you know, the Christmas trees as well are evergreens, but, you know, there's so much of our traditions about Christmas. We do them every year, and we don't actually realise the origins of them at all, about how old they are, because like the evergreen, decorating the house with evergreens would have been something that would be going way, way, way back in, even into Celtic times, it's thought. And it was something that was adopted for kind of Christian practices, like, you know. Yeah. And, like, when you think about the time of year that we're in, like, winter time and the darkness, and you have, like, tomorrow, isn't it, is the shortest day of the year,
yeah,
isn't it? The
winter solstice. Winter solstice, 21st, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like from that day on, then the days start getting longer, and the light starts coming back into people's lives. And like all, like if we can call them our ancestors, way, way back thousands of years ago in Ireland, they recognised that about this time of year, about that it was special, that there was a change in the seasons. And like Newgrange was built, like it's one of the greatest archaeological monuments in the world, was built to kind of map that when the light goes into the chamber in Newgrange. And like, the light is important, and the light is so much part of our Christmas traditions, then, like, the putting the candle in the window.
Yes,
the
that's what I was going to say to you. Yeah,
all of that kind of stuff, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So
it's a spectacular sight, isn't it, looking around the county when you see all the lights in the window, and it's basically, we're open for you know, it has religious connotations, obviously, then, you know, welcoming Jesus and all that, but it's amazing to see it, you know, on these dark winter nights. It does give a lift.
It does. It's lovely. And I don't know if I've ever seen as many houses lit up this year as this year, you know, and it's not, and this is even well before Christmas, you know, that there's so many houses, love beautiful lights in the windows and decorations outside, you know, it's fantastic, like, you know, and I suppose maybe that's an evolving Christmas tradition, is that people decorate the outside of their houses as well. And, you know, there's lots of places there where they go all out, like Tony Noon's place there in Temple Glenton.
Yeah.
Like the charity lights. I'm sure there's other places around the country, you know, that's the one I'd know that we'd go and visit there at Christmas time. Yeah. And, you know, it's just huge, like, you know, and it's nice. And you have the tree of light then outside the cathedral in Killarney as well, as beautiful to see it as well, and the star on top of us, you know, so it's lovely. And, you know, and it's always nice to see the candles lighting in the windows as well, because that's a really, really old tradition, the single candles.
Stay on the line, because we're just going to go to a break. Tom, before I do that, I'm from Dysart, and when we were young, we would do the Rin in Inishmore on Christmas night, always a great welcome, as our mom was from Killocrim, and we would do Lixnaw and Dysart on St. Stephen's Day. We had a great group of siblings, cousins and friends, and the crack was great, and that's what we used to do. We used to around with our cousins, and the smaller ones we'd go for the first mile, and then we'd leave them off, we'd go on the bikes, and then we'd continue on for maybe a 4 mile radius then. Tom, stay on the line, and John Davis is with us here, and I want to find out his traditions as well growing up. We'll take a break with more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
Yes, that's what you're listening to. We're talking about Christmas traditions and the history of Christmas, and John Davis is in studio with us, and Tom Dillon, historian from Listowel, is on the line. Pauline MacDonald gets in touch. When we came home after midnight mass at St. John's Church, my mum had a turkey and ham cooked and a white pound candle in a jar bought at Madden's in Tralee. And the turkey plucking and the December 8th has such massive relevance as well, Tom, doesn't it? Especially in this county. And that's, I was speaking to Lily Kelleher a few weeks ago, who's 100 years of age, and she talked about the turkeys and the turkey plucking and all that, and how, you know that big, it's kind of Black Friday now, but that big Christmas shopping day was December 8th, but it was based on that they'd sell the turkeys and that they'd make their money.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. The 8th of December was a huge shopping day, and people would go to town to do their shopping in preparation for Christmas. And a big thing, actually, a woman in Ballyduff reminded me about it last year, was people would send the turkeys as well away in the post to their relations in England. No, I don't know what condition they'd reach England now, but that was a big thing many years ago.
Yeah, but they were, that. Yeah, because I talked to a woman, again, she was 100 years old out of Carrasaveen, Noreen O'Connell, and I was talking to other people in relation to this. They'd put them into those kind of bags and they'd ship them off over. And mackerel was another thing, but that was probably salted and things like that, and then you'd the hams and all that. But it's amazing they did survive over to London. And that was what I wanted to ask you about, the parcels too, and the parcels home from the places like England and America, because, you know, most of the population were immigrants.
Yeah, this is it. And, you know, I suppose there's an interesting comparison as well about all the traditions that we have here and all of the ones that have come in from other places. And, I mean, like turkeys are not native to Ireland. That would be something that would have come from America, because that's where you'd find them. And lots of other of our Christmas traditions as well would be, like the Christmas tree, like the trees that we use wouldn't even be native to Ireland because they're fir and spruce trees. So, I mean, the origins of the Christmas trees in Germany,
you know, yeah.
So way back in the 16th century, like, yeah, and that they used to put candles on the trees to replicate the stars. And there was never Christmas trees in houses, like, only up until maybe recent decades, like, you know, like certainly in my grandparents' time, there wouldn't have been Christmas trees in people's houses, except maybe in the big houses, because the Christmas tree was really popularized in the 19th century by Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. He was German, and he decorated, was at Windsor Castle, and pictures of that then appeared in the newspapers that time, and descriptions of it appeared even in the Kerry newspapers that time, because I was interested in that, and I said I'd look it up and see, was there anything about it? And there was. They mentioned about it in 1848, and then you had the bigger houses then in Kerry that time, like the Herberts and Muckers House and the Browns that lived in Killarney House there, the Earls of Kenmare. They copied that then, and they would have that, had Christmas trees in their houses, and they would have brought in maybe the children of the people working for them. And the trees that time, like we put decorations on the trees today, that time they'd decorate the trees with toys. So once right. The children would come in to see the tree lighting with all the candles, all the presents were taken off the tree and given to the children. So that was the way it operated that time.
Yeah.
And
it's amazing. I'm just thinking here, like, you know, the way you say the Christmas tree, like, it's something we think that's been around forever, and we think traditions have been around forever, but sometimes they might be just like our parents brought them in, whoever just brought them in, you know. They haven't been there maybe that long. But then there are other things like recipes of fruitcakes and things that have been handed down. John Davis is in the studio. That's John. It's fascinating to hear Tom there kind of sum up the history of Christmas. The traditions in your own house that would have been handed down, is there anyone that stands out?
Do you know, I could listen to Tom talk about Christmas past all day long. Absolutely phenomenal knowledge base. But for me, I remember the Christmas tree. I remember coming in, but it was a silvery, tinsely Christmas tree.
Oh, jeez.
It wasn't the home-grown one. And you decorated it, but it was like, if anyone remembers the Saturday program, Anything Goes, where you had the toilet insert. There wasn't a toilet insert to be found anywhere because the decorations were made out of it. You had your crepe paper.
Yeah.
Everything was handmade.
Yes.
And the paper decorations went from one end of the wall to the other end of the wall.
Yeah.
But they had to be carefully put up, because I remember a couple of times I took plaster and everything down. My mother absolutely gone ballistic over. But it was real homemade job. Everything was paper made, handmade. But like that, you talk about, when you say about cakes, let me tell you a story. My father-in-law was a baker, God rest him.
Yeah.
And my mother was an accomplished baker as well. And it'd be a competition when we got married about baking cakes, you know. And what I remember growing up about the cake is that, you know, you'd be dressing it with marzipan, but you'd be eating the marzipan and you'd be sick
from eating it. Yeah, I remember that, and I didn't even like marzipan, but you'd be eating it, yeah.
Not right, Joe.
Yeah.
But you'd still keep going, you know, you'd suffer on. But then the icing would be laid out, it'd be rolled out and it'd be layered on and put on. But then you'd go piping. Do you remember the pipe?
Yeah.
I'd be helping mom at home. But you'd have these handmade little characters as well that went on with the little silver. Remember the little silver balling?
Silver balls,
hundreds and thousands as well. You'd be eating them. You're sick as a dog. You never want to see a Christmas gift. But what I do remember, and my wife is the same with this, Linda, she'll remember this, is that her dad used to soak some of the dried fruit in brandy.
Yeah.
And she was saying she would smudge. She'd be sucking the dried fruit.
Oh, jeepers. She'd prefer lacking.
You know, but it is, I mean, it's times like this. Yeah, I know you lost your dad during the year, but you'd love to have either Mam or Mike back here to bake another cake.
Yeah.
You know, it's the memory you associate with just the taste, but the whole making of it.
Yeah.
And the fondness, I suppose, of making it.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I think we've probably maybe lost a bit of that. It's the whole process leading into to Christmas, of the making and the prepping and things like that, is vital as well. Just in relation to yourself, Tom, do you look forward to Christmas and do you carry on any of the traditions yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just said this now, listening to two of you talking about Christmas cakes is making me hungry here myself. Like, so. As you mentioned there about paper chains we used to make. I remember when we were small. Yeah. I remember, and you'd use maybe a bit of sellotape to make them, and you'd decorate the house with them. We do keep an awful lot of traditions, you know, and I suppose, like, I'm sitting here inside the Christmas tree, I'm talking to you, and there's loads of decorations up in the tree there. There's a story behind most of them, like who gave them, where we got them at different stages of our lives when we were children. Yeah. And maybe people gave them to us, you know, so memories of people past and gone. The crib, we always put it up and decorating that with holly on Christmas Eve. I'd normally do that job. That's always a job I do and decorate around the pictures and things, like, you know.
Yeah.
Another one, I suppose I forgot to mention, was when you visit the crib in the church, maybe, and you bring a bit of straw home with you, and we used to always visit the live crib in Dwarf, where they'd have it in the stable, and that was done there by Father Pat Moore when he was there. So he had a similar setup in he had a famous crib as well in Irremore Church when he was there, and I remember people used to be talking about the he used to have stuffed animals in it. It was a whole arrangement with all these different things around the crib, and there was a fox watching the goose, all those kind of things, like, you know, that would come to mind, like, and actually as well, the other thing with the holly was at the end of Christmas when it was taken down, you know, after the 6th of January. You would burn that in the fire as well. So that's something. And my grandmother, I often heard my grandmother used to hear talking about all these old traditions, and the same with lighting the candles as well. You'd hear her talking about them. And she was a young woman in when she grew up in Ballyduff, and there's a famous house outside Ballyduff there called Bushmount. And she used to always talk about her grandmother, or her mother would take her back the road to see the candles lighting in the window. It was a big Georgian style house. So there was I don't know how many windows in the front of it. And yeah, there was a candle in every one of the windows.
Yeah. Look, we could be talking about it all morning, Tom. I'm up against the clock here, but I was just thinking there, like, it's about the people, isn't it, and the memories that are created, really. Yeah. That's what it's about. Gary McMahon, RIP, late of Listowel, wrote a lovely poem in 2002, A Kerry Christmas Childhood. I never light the window candles until Christmas Eve, this person says. Many older people still keep the tradition. Now we should leave the holly for the birds. Thanks, Lixnaw listener. Great programme. And you just reminded me there that you were saying the winter solstice. I proposed to my wife on the shortest day of the year, which is tomorrow, but our engagement ring came with a Christmas bauble, and that's always on the tree now, so that's another one. And then, like, with our baby now, it's like, oh, Cullen's first Christmas, there's another bauble for that, which will be there. So yeah, it's amazing. That's another thing you're after setting off. But Tom, thanks a million for coming on. You really added a lot to the programme this morning, and you mentioned your grandmother there, but you're keeping that memory alive and that knowledge alive, which is absolutely fantastic. So happy Christmas to you and your family, and thanks a million for coming on.
Yeah, great talking to you, lads. Happy Christmas, everyone. All the best.
Yeah, that is Tom Dillon there, historian from Listowel. We've lots more messages to get. Keep them coming in, your Christmas traditions. What do you do that's a bit different? Or maybe you've created a new one. Let me know. 066-712-3666. You can text WhatsApp 083-300-3300. We go to break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Yeah, and I hope you're enjoying our very special Christmas programme. We're talking about Christmas traditions and the history of Christmas. Call us 066-712-3666. There will take your calls. You can text or WhatsApp 083-300-3300. Let us know your traditions. I remember the ling fish hanging on the back of the door. Cut off some when you need it. John Davis is with me in studio. That must mean some kind of a smoked kind of fish or something that you'd be able to cut a piece off it.
I don't know, Joe.
Doesn't sound very hygienic today.
Me and fish now would be the best.
You're not
I'm afraid. I'd manage a small bit of cod, but me and fish don't mix, I'm afraid.
No. Speaking of fish, and the sponsor of this programme, we are Quinlan's Fish, and they have a brilliant tradition of smoking the fish and sending it all over the world for Christmas, you know, which is amazing as well. So that's another kind of slant on the ham and the turkeys and all that going out there. Now, a good friend of the programme joins us on the line now, and
I believe. John Davis, you know this man as well. Dominic Walsh, how are you? Happy Christmas to you. You couldn't be bothered coming into the studio. You're joining us on the line. How are you?
Well, happy Christmas to you. Yes, we had arranged that I wasn't going to go into the studio because I was due to be walking in Dublin today.
Yeah.
And at the last minute, last evening, they cancelled the shoot. The weather wasn't good and they put everything back. So, lo and behold, Joe, I'm at home sitting up with my feet up this morning, relaxing.
I'd say that was your plan all along, Dominic. Do you know this man in studio? John, I should ask you. Tell us how you know Dominic Walsh, just in case he doesn't know. You know, it'd be awful embarrassing.
Well, Dominic and I soldiered many years ago in Ballybunion as two lifeguards, believe it or not.
Baywatch. I can picture it now, the two boys, Mitch Buchanan.
Well, John Davis, my friend. Listeners, I did not know that this was the John Davis was on the radio this morning. John, a good friend of mine, and we did do a lot of lifeguarding in our younger days in Ballybullen. We had sometimes drop something, I think, but outside, and the times we out there, and the rain, it'd be down, the cold, it'd be there, and you'd still be walking the beach to make sure everybody was safe like that, you know.
I'd say you were two posers, were you?
Well, no, I wouldn't have been a poser like that at all. No, there was no Baywatch that time, Joe, I can tell you that. It was just lifeguards going out doing their work and making sure everybody was safe like that. And to be honest, like it was a tough... Ballybunion was my first beach I ever did a lifeguard on. And my God, we had a lot of rescues out there like that. More preventative ones than actually rescues. And that's the job of a lifeguard.
Yeah, that's true.
Something happening as opposed to the rescue. So it was a great place to work.
Yeah. Was he enjoyable to work with?
Oh, he was.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I do. I remember, believe it or not, one specific rescue that we pulled off. I think it was about four kids we pulled out near the cave, Dominic, if you can remember it.
Correct.
It just happened within a split second. We were watching it together and you could see it unfold. The rip just caught them. They were on nylon and out it went.
Jeez.
And Dominic was in on my six, right behind me.
Yeah.
And it was a close call that day. I remember I got the fright of my life. But you couldn't have a better man than Dominic, would you?
Yeah, that's amazing to think, yeah, because I kind of made light of it there at the start, but it was. it actually, you put me back in my box there fairly quick. It is fairly serious stuff, Dominic, you were involved in there.
Yeah, and Joe, and that's, I'm just back to say, like John and myself there, when you're in lifeguard mode, you're in lifeguard mode. And when you're walking up and down the beach, and even though you're chatting to each other, you're actually in lifeguard mode, and you can spot things that other people mightn't spot. You know, like our things, like in Ballybunion. Like, so if something like that happened, you'd be aware of it. You'd actually see it happen. You'd know where the rips are. The rips in Ballybunion Beach tend to be in the same place most of the time on that. And you'd be watching out for the kids. I think we spent more time minding lost kids in Ballybunion. I remember John F. Grimm going into the live cast source and the screaming kids inside me trying to watch them and mind them and take care of them. And the moms come up like that, you know, on that. And you know, something like it was a time where people, I think, spent a lot more time at beaches because there wasn't a lot of cars around. And it was a big thing to come to Ballybunion for the summer. Well, you'd do the Bachelor Festival and the times like that. So people from Limerick around used to always congregate there. And the crowds used to be unbelievable out there.
Yeah, yeah. Jeez, that'd be mayhem, all right. You know, during the summer when it's flat, when you're flat out.
Well, I remember one, Dominic, I don't know if you were working this day, but it was what I call Black Monday, which was the August Bank Holiday weekend in 1989. And the beach, there was no room on the beach. And we just closed down the hut and everyone was covered in water. It was just crazy. I think I have photographs at home. It was just bedlam.
Yeah. Speaking of the water, Dominic, that's a big time of year for you. And we were talking about traditions. The Christmas Day swim, you cover that.
I do. I cover it like that. As John would be aware, I used to take part in for many years on that. But then I decided to go the other side and use the photography side and like that. Yes, I will. I'll be heading to Banna for their Christmas swim on that. Now, Banna has one, Fianna, Ballyhigh, Ballybunion. South Kerry beaches have them. Killarney have them. Back in West Kerry and Dingle, they have them as well. Deck and Malone covers the photography back there like that. They're great days, and it's good to get out there and enjoy it like that. And the majority of them are for charity. So, it benefits as well. But again, taking the lifeguard side, be very aware of what you're doing. Make sure you go to a beach that actually has an organised swim. So when there's organisers there and they would have lifeguards and people to keep you safe on there. Because, Joe, it's not often some people get into the sea and they tend to go out Christmas Day, run into the water thinking this is brilliant, and then cold water shock sets in. And what cold water shock is when you go in and your body gets a shock of the cold and you start palpitating like that, so you kind of run out of breath on that. And if you jump into water, head first into the water, and your body goes into this mode like that, it's quite difficult. You could drown actually from it. So take your time. Go in nice and easy. Don't be the brave person that runs in ahead of everybody else on that. Let the more experienced ones go ahead and dip your toe in and then go in nice and gently, and you'll absolutely enjoy it. But I leave my house at 10 to 12. I go out to Bannan. The swim will start at 12:30 exactly, and go in, and I'll take my pictures, be back here in my office at 10 to 1, and I'll have my pictures sent out to national papers. And it is just lovely. The buzz is out there, is brilliant. And I meet people out there I tend to meet only every year at that location.
Yeah, wow. Now, there's a photo that you've sent to us, a very Christmas one, because our theme for this month and the first Saturday of the month, you'll be back with us for our In Focus photography slot, is Tis the Season. So we want you to send those photos to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie before midday Wednesday, before the first Saturday of the month. And there's a photo up on Radio Kerry's Facebook page, Dominic. It's of the Ash Memorial Hall. And there's a very mystical, magical kind of a red, yellow, golden streak on the right-hand side. This is an amazing photo. Is this one of spot photography that you made the most of an opportunity and you caught something or someone very special?
Well, you know something, I usually photograph the Ashmore Hall every year. And I went off down to take pictures on that. And it was a lovely late evening. I think it was probably very close around Christmas Eve I took it. On yeah. that, and I was down, set up the camera, looking there, couldn't see anything, Joe, and just went to take some pictures, and I heard a little bit of a jingle bell on that, and thought no more about it, and took my pictures, came back, and when I put the picture up on my screen, you can actually see these lines, these red lines going along it, and it's taken a very sharp corner. It's obviously something that was going super fast
yes.
on that. Maybe this person might be calling to Cullen's house over the next couple of weeks.
Or I hope so, yeah.
You know, on that. So we're just mystified. It'd be great to have the young listeners and you at home, a young person at home, should go onto Radio Kerry website there, the Facebook page, and have a look at this. You can actually see it. I'm at awe. I can't make out. I can't see what it is. All I can see is the lights, because it was obviously travelling so fast. Just for the people that might like to know, the shutter speed was obviously very slow. I think it was about 15 seconds
yeah.
on that I took this. So that kind of brings the lights in and you get the little light going along on that. So it's an interesting one. I'm still waiting. Like we're all open to interpretation of this picture, and I'm sure your listeners will come on about it.
Yeah, well, I've just asked, do you spot something magical in this photo? And I've put it up there now on the Facebook page. So especially for young listeners, if they could go along and see, can they spot anything or anyone in that photo? It would be great to hear. Dominic, are you off duty? Are you for Christmas Day? I remember there.
You're
very thoughtful, because I think you've cooked a dinner once in the last 20 years in your household, and you're taking another year off or day off this year.
I am now. Joe, in all fairness, now to cook a dinner once in 20 years is good for me. Do you know, and that
it's good for your family too.
It's probably great. You can be delighted. I'm not doing it like that. You know, my wife will cook Christmas dinner this year like that, and we said we have a nice, quiet Christmas there. As I say, what I tend to do is I get up, we get some things ready, get the fire going like that. You know, and that, and I can remember when I was young in my own house like that. Every time I got up Christmas Day, the fire was always lighting, and I loved that ambient heat around the place, and to see the fire and the flames and the timber burning in the fire is absolutely lovely. Yeah. So that's what I'll do. I'll get up early on that, and I like those two fireplaces. I like two of the fires like that, and it's lovely. It just creates that bit of ambience, like when you get up, that lovely heat. Christmas lights will be on. Then I'll get myself ready, go out to Banna, come back in. We used to have the dinner at a certain time, but now we tend to have it when it's ready.
Yes.
So we sit back and relax and just throw the feet up, you know, and just, and a lot of people are on that. And it's just great to have that around there. Now, you mentioned traditions there as well. And if I may just go back to one tradition as a young fella in my local state in Tralee, in Kerrins Park, and anybody from the Strand North Kerrins Park area, this will resonate into their minds now that they might need to be thinking of. When we were young in Kerrins Park, it was roughly about 150 young kids there in a park of 56 houses. And just that would just tell you what life was like back maybe 30, 40 years ago.
Like
the families were a lot bigger on that. And what we used to do is we used to do carol singing before Christmas. And we'd go around the park and we'd bring a Santy around, or the committee would bring a Santy around. And that Santy would go into each house and bring in a gift, whether it was... It wasn't sweets or anything like that. It would have been cake or like something that you might need. It could be butter, it could be beans or something like that. That's what the tent was given out that time. The young kids might get a couple of sweets, all right, but it was actually something that you could use on Christmas Day. And we just go around to the houses like that and be running in and out of the houses. And it was just a great time when we were young. And like it's those times that when you sit at home during Christmas, you tend to always go back. We have this thing about Christmas, don't we, Joe and John? Like we tend to... We always remember back what it was like when we were young, or what our parents did, or what we heard went on around the place like that. And I think it just gives everybody a lovely, nurturing feeling. And we just remember the people that have gone past as well.
Yeah, and that's, it's very well said. I think I was saying this during the year, that life is chapters and Christmas is chapters as well. It's not going to be the same Christmas forever. It's going to be a different one every generation or whatever. But it's the traditions or the things that are handed down that ties all those Christmases together. Dominic, we're out of time. I just want to wish you a very happy Christmas and a very healthy new year to you and your family. You've been a great addition every year to this programme, and I want to thank you for all your contributions to In Focus during the year.
Not a bother, and thank you so much. Thank you, John. Great to chat to you. And Joe, I hope Santa now comes, your first Christmas, Santa Claus calling to the house yourself and Mags and Colin, and I wish you a very happy Christmas, and to everybody else, and to our listeners for sending the pictures. We really, really appreciate it. That's what makes the programme, not Joe and I talking, it's the pictures that you send in.
Thanks a million, Dominic. See, we can be nice to each other too. No, happy Christmas. We'll talk to you, and I'll be talking to you the first Saturday of the month. That is Dominic Walsh in Focus there, and you can send your photos for In Focus to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. John Davis is going to stay with us. We'll take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across the county, serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
Yeah, some wonderful memories coming into us on Christmas traditions. There, let's take your calls. 0667123666. You can text WhatsApp 0833003300. Lots of compliments to Tom Dillon, historian from Listowel, as well, give you his context around Christmas and the traditions that have been handed down. My mother used to send a turkey to each of her sisters in London. They were wrapped in a sackcloth, which was sewn in place, and the address label was sealed with sealing wax. Before she wrapped the turkey, she signed the tiny feathers of it with methylated spirits that set alight in the cover of a tin. I was wondering, signed, that'd be very cute. So she singed the tiny feathers of it with methylated spirits that was set alight in the cover of a tin. Like, look at that lovely process involved in sending the turkey. Hi, Joe, enjoying your programme about Christmas traditions. When I was a child, my father would go down to Barry's Pub Shop in Camp on Christmas Eve, and Siobhan would have the ling fish fresh from Dingle. It was smoked, it was fresh, and my mother would boil it in milk with onions, pepper and salt. Christmas Eve was a fast day in our house anyway, and I must say that I loved the smell of the ling cooking on the open fire, but it wasn't my favourite dish at Christmas, I have to say. Happy Christmas to you all, Bridget O'Connor. Thanks a million for that, Bridget. That really gives context to the whole ling on the door. Wonderful message there. And we also got another, we've a lot of them coming into us, John. Compliments of the season to you and yours, all at Radio Kerry, listeners worldwide. My childhood memories of Christmas are living in a lovely thatched cottage before rural electrification, when the youngest child would light the candles, his hand being held by Dad as he did so, and waking up very early to see what Santa brought us, and going to visit the crib on St. Stephen's Day. Catherine Hearn in Ballylongford, you were mentioning something off air about the crib, John.
I did. It's something I spoke to my wife Linda about, and I said, was there traditions in your house? And two things that came to mind to her, she said, first of all, when she was small, it was the youngest put the baby Jesus into the crib on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
But on Christmas Eve then, you had what was kind of a single, kind of a log, a single candle, and the youngest would light the candle.
Yeah.
You know, it was a tradition in our house.
Yeah, it's amazing, because I'd say if you were to follow this to the letter of the law, you wouldn't be having the three wise men till later on as well, you know. So you have to be really watchy it. I was thinking about that as well, you know, the plays and all that. Like, they're becoming big productions now, aren't they? Which is amazing, and there's a lot of work goes into them for the schools. But it used to be just a nativity play, and that was it, wasn't it? It's kind of changed now, it's evolved.
Yeah, I know my wife now is an SNA, and she is doing prep with her kids for the Christmas play as well. But it's like getting to say their lines, and you're going to your watch. It's fantastic. Yeah. It's phenomenal. And it is part of Christmas, you know, yeah, to see kids and getting their part out, you know.
Yeah.
It's become a big thing.
Yeah, but it's also, I suppose, like speech and drama and all that. It's brilliant for their communications, for their confidence, and everyone gets a part, which is just, yeah, it's brilliant. Good morning, Joe. Great programme, very interesting. That comes in from a more listener. Hi, Joe. There's a gorgeous live crib in Asti every year, which includes a video of Father Pat Moore, RIP, and photos of those who have passed away in the locality during the year. Really worth visiting. Yeah, that's brilliant to hear. Keep them coming in, 066-712-3666. You can text WhatsApp 083-300-300. We'll be hearing more Christmas traditions, including we'll be going to Poor McGee to Sean O'Leara, of course, whose parents had a grocery shop. So we'll be interested to hear what things were like back in the day in the grocery shop coming up to Christmas. And like I said, if you have traditions, keep them coming to us. 066-712-3666, 083-300-300. We'll take a break and we'll have the news, and I'll join you again in the next hour.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
We're talking about Christmas traditions and the history of Christmas. And John Davis is in studio with me. And now a graduate of the Radio Kerry Podcasting and Journalism course with Kerry College and Radio Kerry. Happy Christmas, Joe, and all the gang at Radio Kerry. Hope you have a lovely Christmas and all the best for 2026. Thank you for a great opportunity as a transition year student for the experience at Radio in October. All the best from Luke Mangan, Beaufort, Milltown Presentation Secondary School. Hello, Luke. How are you? You did a great job while you were in doing the TY, and it was a pleasure having all those TYs in with us. Wishing you, morning, Joe, enjoying your programme as always. Wishing you and Dominic Walsh and your families a very happy Christmas and all that is good for 2026. Keep up the good work. Sincerely, Anne Morrissey. Please ask families to make Christmas happy memories for their children, and hopefully in years to come they will tell of happy stories on Radio Kerry too. And that's a lovely positive message to get. John, another thing you were mentioning to me during the week when we were talking about Christmas memories, whatever, the RTE guide.
Oh yeah. The yeah. Bumper edition, Joe. Do you remember? Yeah.
Is it as big as it is now? It probably isn't as big as it was, but I remember so. That was a massive thing to be getting in the door.
You see, TV now is on demand. You can yeah. Look up the click and get whatever program you want. But back then, if you remember, Joe, you'd be waiting for it to come into the house, and then you'd be with the biro, with the pencil, and you'd be circling, and you'd have it planned out. The entire Christmas period yeah. Was planned out for you. You'd have all your programs, all your films
yeah.
Sorted.
Yeah, like the Die Hard. Is it a Christmas movie? Is it that? Or a Home Alone? You'd be looking for where that was. The fire as well, Dominic Walsh reminded me of there, the open fire. Like, we'd have that in ours, it'd be a turf fire. And I remember you'd go down to the sitting room, because the sitting room, you know, it was like the house that, you know, the room that only the guests would be going to. But at Christmas, we'd go into the sitting room and you'd have the fire lighting. But I'd turn off the lights in the room at night, and you'd have the Christmas lights on and the turf fire just crackling away, and looking at it, it was just, geez, it was real cosy.
There's something about an open fire that's just so special. Right?
Yeah. As my parents didn't celebrate Christmas growing up, this comes in from a listener, I'm so happy to be making new traditions with my own family. Our Christmas traditions are homemade hot chocolate made with real chocolate. Put the ingredients into the slow cooker and head off for a walk while it cooks. Geez, that's a great tip. We arrive home to the most indulgent and rich chocolatey smell and delicious hot drink. I'm stealing that. I'm doing that for Christmas. We also have the 12 books of Christmas, which I think might be originally of Finnish origin, where we bring 12 new books into the house, 3 for each of us, and open them all on Christmas Eve. Cuddle up under the blankets and get stuck into our new books. It slows things right down on a night that can get very hectic with children and gets them ready for a nice early night for Santa. That's brilliant, John, isn't it?
Absolutely fabulous, yeah.
Yeah, unreal. Now, on the line, I'm delighted to say, we have a famous Goatman, storyteller, Shana Key, so much more, Sean O'Leary. Sean, how are you doing this morning? Happy Christmas to you.
Happy Christmas, Joe, and a happy solstice as well.
Oh, very well said. Tomorrow. And yes, tell us, Sean, like I mentioned, your family had a grocer shop.
We're called the Grocers. Our Dutch is dying out now, a small, but the name Grocer.
Yeah. And do you like that name?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Anything that singles you out, you know, John the Grocer.
Yeah.
And I'd be the small grocer.
And what was it like at Christmas time in the grocery
very,
shop?
Very, very busy. It would be very, very busy. There'd be people coming and going. But then it was almost like a community centre, because somebody might be going out and somebody might be coming in, and they'd sit down and Mom might make tea for people then if they're sitting around and stuff, and then somebody else would come. And then if the postman came, he'd be sitting down as well, because they would be getting letters off him and they'd be giving letters to him, and it would be a complete crowded place, you know, and they'd all be... But I was just thinking, I was just listening to an ad there on Radio Kerry, the idea of shopping local.
Mm.
I mean, that's not a new concept, Joe. Mm. Long ago, there was this like circular economy, because as well, Mom made puddings, Christmas puddings for people. Yeah. But Mary Kennedy down here in Hambury made a beautiful kind of... it was like a homemade cake, but there was spices and fruit in it as well. It wasn't a Christmas cake. A fruit cake, I suppose.
Yeah.
And somebody else made brown bread. So all the kind of ingredients were going around. And then Noreen, God rest her, my sister, tells a great story. She'd had to cycle down to Sonny's.
Yeah.
Sonny Casour's over the road.
Yeah, knew him well, yeah.
Yeah, to get the goose. And the goose would be in a bag, tied to the handlebars, Noreen cycling back, and the goose trying to grab Noreen. And she said she was never so... And you can imagine what she called the goose, and she was never so delighted to eat that dinner after it.
It was well aired.
Oh my God! And she trying to cycle, and he'd be tied onto the middle of the handlebars, and he'd be grabbing and napping. And Dad, I remember Dad then plucking him with a candle. Then for you, there was a lady there on saying about the methylated spirits. Well, Dad wouldn't be that au fait with things. And he was burning off with a candle. And then it would be hanging at the back door for a few days.
Yeah.
And I'd be playing with that. Then I'd be kind of dancing with it.
Yeah. We used to use our turkey as a punching bag. I remember that. I don't know. My mother noticed that, because it used to be hanging in the attic. And we'd go up and we'd be punching away.
I was driving with it.
It just shows our different mentality, Sean.
Yeah. It's the driver and the buckler. And I'm just talking there about the RT guide. Oh, my God. The Sugra and the Spree.
Oh, yeah.
Sugra, the Spree, Sonus.
Shimsa. Yeah.
Shimsa, four of them. Oh, my God. And when you went up a level, Joe, oh, my God, it was like being in the adult section. Yeah. You know, when you got up to them, the top one, oh, my God, it was so, they were amazing as well. We'd be doing our homework, and we didn't realize it over the Christmas.
You're right.
We were just walking away. Yeah. And there's a great cartoon, and it's available on YouTube, and it's such a beautiful thing. I think it's made in the 50s. It's called The Night the Animals Spoke, or The Animals Could Talk.
All right.
And I remember watching that. Of course, I was a garçon in the house, so I was always sitting in somebody's lap watching things.
Mm.
I'm watching this, and it's a beautiful, I won't say anymore.
Yeah.
But Shaneen here then got an ease. And I decided that it wasn't just one cow and one donkey in the crib. And, of course, I had loads of farm sets growing up.
Yeah.
So there was about 10 cows in the crib and 10 donkeys. I was listening to about Father Pat Moore, who was such a lovely man. And Holy Mary could hardly move inside the crib by animals. And it wasn't just one camel. It was four or five camels that the wise men had. And not only that, Joe... I suppose I was four or five. The shepherds brought all the sheep with them from the mountain. So there was a trail of sheep across the floor from where the crib was under the tree all over the house. This trail of sheep. And the sisters were going mad at this, of course. What if somebody comes in and all the sheep? And Mum was, leave him alone. Leave him alone. He's all right. Leave him alone.
You're a bit of a pato, I'd say, Sean.
Oh, completely, completely. And I still have it. But it's such, I would encourage anyone to look that up. It is such a beautiful. And yeah. You know, as well, Joe, it's kind of, you know, the true story of Christmas is the greatest man ever born was born in a stable. And no matter how big your tree is or how great your decorations, your man there, I think John was saying about everything was homemade and it was so much nicer. And do you know what I mean? So much is so slick now and overproduced. It's lovely to have that feeling, stable-ish.
Yeah, and it means more as well. And like it's always, you know, it's not the destination, it's the journey. It's the same at Christmas, it's the build-up. But then if you have these traditions where you're getting together as a family to do them, or, you know, with your siblings or whatever, that's where the memories come from then.
Oh, yeah. So there's a friend of mine and herself and her sisters all meet and they have a crafting day and they make all their stuff together. And it's just such a beautiful thing to do, you know, I suppose, consumerism. But you were saying about lighting the candles as well, because Mom was from Cork. And after all the talking about the insular economy, we used to get the parcel from Cork then as well. And the big thing was the St. Martin's candle, because Mom was a big devotion, had a big devotion to St. Martin. Mm. So it was like a white cube, and there was pictures on either side. There was like four pictures, but there was a beautiful kind of crumbly, curly wax around the edges of it. And of course, again, being the youngest and always being the youngest, I was always lighting the candle. That was my job.
Yeah.
And we used to also get spiced beef. Oh, my God. This, and again, it was only for Christmas and it was so beautiful. And Teresa used to send down a Madeira cake, which was so yellow on the inside and so brown on the outside. But Joe McGill and John Davis and everybody in Kerry, nobody knew how special we were in our house. We didn't have whiskey. We didn't have milk. We didn't have Club Orange. We didn't have champagne for our dinner. We had Canora.
Canora.
Oh, my God. This was like the Canora. And it would be spared. Do you know what I mean? It would be trying to last it as long. And the taste of that. And now I see it in the market house and Super Value and the small bottles available.
That's right, yeah. It's making a bit of a comeback, yeah.
Yeah, but it was like this was the nectar of the gods. There was no way anybody anywhere had Canora, only us. It was probably the most special. But growing up then, my dad would always be involved in the cooking, but he kind of took over Christmas dinner, or the turkey anyway. Mom was actually kind of orchestrating everything, but Dad would be, and he'd be rushing in and rushing out, and he'd be all this kind of, the turkey flew away. I opened the oven, and when we were small, it was so great fun, and we'd be rushing out to see, was the turkey there? But when we were over, and after being out Christmas Eve, it was just like, would you just get the turkey cooked, please?
He sounds like a bit of an entertainer, like yourself, Sean. Your
dad. God, he was. Yeah. He loved all that kind of thing. He loved the dramatics of things, you know. And my mom as well. My mom would be kind of egging him on, you know. And going around with those cakes was a huge thing as well. There was a complete a buzz around the place, because you'd be sent off your puddings to this house and they'd be giving you stuff, or they'd have called, and there was a real currency of cake. And oh my God, the biscuits was huge as well.
Yeah.
The USA, I was trying to think of different tins of biscuits, and maybe your listeners, afternoon tea.
Yes.
USA.
Yeah. USA are the big one. Yeah.
But everybody had their own brand that they would buy and give to other people. And nobody ever doubled up. I don't know how they did it.
Yeah.
But then there was a new person came into the syndicate, and she bought Danish cookies.
Yes. That's, I was about to say to you, Sean, that wasn't that one, the one with in Copenhagen, the mermaid on the thing you'd see?
Yeah. And that wasn't really the thing. There was no bit of chocolate. That was a little bit frowned upon. Did she not get the memo?
They were posh.
Yeah, but there was no kind of chocolate or bit of I remember my mom kind of like, sure, you crush them and give them to the hens.
Oh,
like,
you know? Yeah. Sacrilege spreading around the yard.
Yeah.
Sean, how's you mentioned the crib and how, you know, most people have a small crib and your crib grew with so many animals. You're kind of doing the same in real life because you started off with just a few goats, but it seems you've a menagerie now. And we can hear one of your friends there in the background. What is that?
That's
brand?
Grover.
What's that?
This is Grover. Grover. Grover's after having pups, so they're all in here. It's like a total fresh here now at the moment. And there's a good few hens now and a few chicks as well. And Betty and Babson are the two coony pigs, and they're up and they are amazing. I've never had pigs before.
Yeah.
But they are just unashamedly, like, they're not afraid of anything. They're around. They just do their own thing. They're completely so clever. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're intelligent creatures, aren't they? Yeah.
Boy, terrible. Yes, too intelligent at times, I can tell you. they just watch and they know and they can preempt things. And but at the same time, when they run up to me, and do you know what I'm not used to? I'm only getting used to it now, is their noise. The noise they make, Joe, is so kind of disalarming, I suppose would be the word. It's like an alarm because it just throws you off what you're doing because it's like, you know?
Yeah, I was going to ask you to do it. I'm glad you did it. Yes, that's a great impression of it, actually. Yeah.
I'm well used to it now, Joe.
you're probably talking back to them in that way as well. Like, Sean, you went massive during viral during COVID, you know, with your videos that, you know, helped a lot of people, you know, during social isolation and all that. You'd go out and you make your videos, you'd show them your animals and you'd show the care you had for them. And it's gone from strength to strength for you, hasn't it?
It has, and I have a little kind of a live streaming thing there, podcast every Saturday night, Yarn from the Barn, and I'm doing one Christmas Eve now, and New Year's Eve.
Lovely.
And it is, and it's kind of a nice, it's you know, you'd be kind of going, is anybody listening? Why am I doing this? And next thing you'll get a beautiful message from somebody. I just so love looking in, and I so love, you know, because I suppose I live on my own, and there's a lot of people out there who live on their own, and it's a very nice way of getting together and chatting and sharing, just like we're doing this morning, sharing memories and stuff like that. And of course, the television as well, the Waltons and Little House on the Prairie Christmas specials used to be huge.
Yeah.
But so we'll be chatting about all those kind of things. And it's just so nice. And it's, in a way, you know, growing up, yourself would have had that experience too, Joe, that the older people were our best friends growing up because we'd be all going around visiting them with the messenger in the Far East. And it has that kind of a feeling to it, you know, that we're all just sitting around chatting and wait till I tell you, and the dog having pups now and the hens and the chicks and the whole lot, you know, and it's so lovely.
Excellent. Sean, we're out of time, but if people want to find your Yarn from the Barn, where should they go?
Sean and Shanaki on Facebook.
Brilliant. And that's where they can find you. 8 o'clock
tonight.
Brilliant. So Sean, it's a pleasure as always. A very happy Christmas to you and a healthy
Christmas
New Year to you as well.
Talk to you soon. Take care now.
That is Sean O'Leary there. Wonderful, brilliant memories he brought up there. John Davis is going to stay with us, and we have to get to a lot of your memories. 0667123666. You can text WhatsApp 083-300-3300. We'll be back after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals. Available in store.
0667123666. Service take your calls. You can text WhatsApp 083-300-3300. We're talking about Christmas traditions and what are yours. Just had to share this Christmas memory relayed to me by my late dad. When he was small, his mother always sent a turkey in the post to her sister in England. One Christmas, she put a bottle of whiskey in the turkey's body. When the turkey arrived, her sister was delighted, thinking he was all stuffed, ready to roast. They had an explosive Christmas that year. Oh my God. Happy Christmas, Joe, to you and all. in Radio Kerry, Joan and Sean Big. Another message comes in here. Spanish people open their gifts on January 6th and Italians have a fish dinner on Christmas Eve. So many traditions in each country, and that is so true, yeah. Morning, Joe. A big effort by priests in the coming week to bring back the sacred tradition of going to confession before Christmas, renewing the soul. Hi, Joe. I live on my own. And Christmas is not my favourite time of year, but have lots of great Christmas memories. It was always lovely coming in from the farm on Christmas Day to the smell of the Christmas dinner cooking. Also, my mother always made a lovely Christmas cake. Happy Christmas to you and all in Radio Kerry, Charles. And very happy Christmas to you, Charles. And I want to wish you a very healthy New Year as well. And you're always great to get in touch with the programme. When Sean was on about the neighbours as well, my father used to, at Christmas Day, he'd go to a few old people that he'd know, you know, on Christmas Day and drop in them as well. That's important, to drop into people too Christmas Day.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's a sense of community.
Yeah.
And I think we're celebrating what's happened throughout the year, and neighbours are so important this time of the year. I mean, I'm in the country, and drop a phone call, they're in to help you.
Yeah.
We have to remember these things.
Yeah, because some people it'll be a day just to get through, like, you know, yeah, so we have to remember that as well. Christmas Eve, you've a few traditions around Christmas Eve.
Well, for us, I suppose it's the last minute.com, the last minute shop, as we said at the beginning of the show. I have to get that out of the way. We step into town, we have maybe a cup of coffee, a mince pie, pick up the turkey and ham.
Yeah.
We'll go home and sit for a while. And not so much in the last couple of years, but before that, you'd be prepping because midnight mass was a big thing. You'd be going in for the midnight mass and you'd get mass out of the way so you'd have a clear run at the day, as they say.
Yeah. Christmas the unbelievables,
day.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of, you're back into Christmas Day for mass. But that was kind of a thing in the past. Like the big thing was going when I was younger was midnight mass. It was just, to be there.
Yeah.
It felt like you were growing up. It was brilliant, you know?
Yeah. And was it at midnight? Or was it at 10 o'clock?
I can't remember. I think it was earlier than midnight, but as far as I was concerned, the fact that I was up past 9 o'clock, I was in. I was in with the in crowd.
The prepping for Santa, you know, was just amazing Christmas.
Oh, God, I do. I remember that. You'd have the tray set out. You'd have your milk. You'd have your mince pies. And you know what something got me, Joe, was you'd put out one carrot for Rudolph, but I knew something was up because there was other reindeers.
Yeah.
And they're saying, why only one carrot?
Yeah.
Do they have to share it?
Yeah.
But this is all the kind of stuff that was in my head. But then again, it's also the idea for us is that we have this idea of jammies, Christmas jammies. The Christmas jammies are put on early.
Yeah.
Excitement for all the younger people there.
Yeah. Sure, but I'd imagine Rudolph, he shares it with all the other reindeers as well anyway, you know, and they all
I'd
look
say
after
so
each other.
It's Christmas, he'd have to.
Yeah. Hello, can you put a request for Sheila Griffin Glimbe from her husband, William Griffin, and also from Lorraine, Patrick Sive, and Elia Morarty. Thanks. Happy birthday. Good morning, Joe. Happy Christmas to everyone. I'm really enjoying the moment. I'm really enjoying every moment of your most interesting Christmas edition of the Saturday Supplement. I'm in the sunset years of life, and each year I relive Christmas past. Dusk on Christmas Eve is my time to wish and reminisce. The youngest person in our home will light the candle and place baby Jesus in the crib, like John and Sean were saying earlier. Mass on Christmas Day and Silent Night sung by the whole congregation is heaven on earth. Go Bermead Bio. On Omshaw Arish Lacunov Day, and that comes in from Agnes. Agnes, I hope you're well. A very happy Christmas to you. Happy Christmas, Joe. The Lawyer Crampon and District Journal is on the shelves. Another Christmas tradition. Happy Christmas to everyone, Joe Harrington. Yeah, and a great read. I have to say, well done, Joe. So that's a lovely Christmas present. Hi, can you say happy birthday to Sheila? Sheila, you're a popular woman, Glimbe from Sive, and Daniel Moriarty. John, there's so much more we could have spoke about Christmas films and everything else. But thanks a million for coming in. A very happy Christmas to you and your family, and enjoy it and have a prosperous New Year. And thanks a million for adding so much to the program this morning.
Many thanks, Joe. And to all the listeners, a happy Christmas and a prosperous New Year.
Yes, and after the break, we will be having our Artist Kingdom, and we'll be featuring Tralee-based artist Cathy Cronin.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer-ready meals available.
The countdown is on. Don't miss the gifts they'll really love and want. Harvey Norman has the tech everyone's talking about, like the Garmin Fenix 8 Pro, with advanced training tools and connectivity so they can train harder and adventure further. Available for $1,199. And with our best price guarantee, you won't pay more for your gifts. Shop in store, online, or skip the queues with Click and Collect. Christmas wrapped up with Harvey Norman.
Looking for the ideal Christmas gift for the country music lover in your family? Wrap up a night they genuinely love with tickets to Sounds Country with the Stars, live in the Glen Eagle Ballroom on Wednesday, February 11th. They'll enjoy an incredible lineup of Jack Keogh, T.R. Dallas, Crystal Swing, Bernie Heaney, Declan Nerney, Kathy Durkin, The Murphys and Paddy McAuliffe. All backed by the Ryan Turner Band and hosted by Radio Kerry's King of Country, Dermot Moriarty. Tickets are £36.75 plus fees, and this is a gift guaranteed to hit the right note. Get yours today at gleneaglearena.ie.
A Rose Hotel gift card, the perfect gift this Christmas. Give someone you love lots of choice, like an overnight stay, delicious dining options, afternoon tea, or serenity spa treatments. Purchase online at therosehotel.com or call 066 71 99 100. A Rose Hotel gift card, the perfect Christmas gift.
Samaritans of Kerry wish to thank the public for its continued support over the past 40 years. Without your generous contributions, we wouldn't be able to continue providing support and an ear to listen to those who access our services. We will once again be asking you to please give what you can during our Churchgate collections on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Should you wish to assist with these Samaritan collections, please contact Michael on 087 0512 454.
With 684 kilometres of coastline, the beautiful Kerry coast is our workplace. And as the year comes to an end, like a fisherman bringing his catch ashore, we hope your net has been filled with many gifts, family, health and happiness. Quinlan's Fish, from sea to shore throughout the kingdom, wishing you and yours everything that is good this Christmas and New Year.
Start the new year with an O'Callaghan coach holiday. Our full 2026 schedule is now ready to browse and book online. Join us for trips across Ireland, Northern Ireland, the UK and Europe. Carlow's Country Music Weekend, Westport, Belfast and Kilkenny. Plus a selection of new tours including Wonders of the West Midlands in the UK. Visit O'CallaghanCoaches.com.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now, I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. Last week, we started the first episode of our series, An Artist's Kingdom, which profiles eight artists around this county. And last week, we heard from John Hurley. And now we're going to hear from another Tralee-based artist. This is Cathy Cronin.
This documentary is a Císte Communications production, funded by Cumasúna Man with a television licence fee.
This is Artist's Kingdom, an eight-part radio series that takes listeners on an immersive journey into the diverse and vibrant world of artists in County Kerry. Through the lens of creativity, we will explore the unique cultural landscape that has inspired generations of artists, shaping their work and contributing to the rich artistic tapestry of the region. The series will gather some of the finest artists in the county, where they share a dedication to their art. We will explore some of the most impressive and interesting Kerry-based artists today who are truly doing their county proud. Cathy Cronin is a Tralee-based artist. She graduated from LSAD in 2022. She works mainly in acrylics and oil paints. Her work is centred around the relationship between human bodies and the spaces that they inhabit.
I was constantly creating things when I was younger. I was constantly drawing. Pretty much from the time I could hold a pen, I was creating pictures. I was drawing all over my school books. I was drawing constantly.
So what got Cathy into art?
There was no one formative moment that got me into art. It was always just this tendency that was in me. I always wanted to be creating things and I always wanted to be making things. And I've thought about that before. Like, was there this one moment where I decided I want to be an artist? There really wasn't. I just was an artist. My parents were both hugely influential to me. They weren't artists and they weren't involved in creative arts, but just the whole aspect of hard work and of working towards a goal, and they instilled that into me, that work ethic and want to achieve.
Following her Leaving Certificate, Cathy set about pursuing a career in art.
So first of all, following the Leaving Cert, I did a PLC course in Art and Design to prepare a portfolio for when I applied to Limerick School of Art and Design. Then following that, I attended Limerick School of Art and Design for 5 years. I initially tried to be a graphic designer. It didn't go very well, so I followed my true passion of painting, which has been going much better.
To Cathy, art was a calling.
It was like I had no other choice but to follow it. It was almost a calling in itself, in that even though it's not a wise path to follow in terms of financial stability and in terms of consistently having work, it's when you're so in love with creating things, it's very difficult to see even any other option. Like, even if you were to ask me what I'd be doing right now if I wasn't a painter, I wouldn't be able to answer, because I can't imagine what it would be like to not be doing the exact thing I'm doing now. It's all that I've ever really wanted to do, and there's just never been any other option in my mind.
Whilst there are many challenges to being an artist, Cathy embraces them.
There's always challenges, but the challenges are part of the fun, because the challenges are what kind of teach you to work on this problem-solving tendency that a lot of artists have, that you're always trying to figure out, okay, how can I make this vision in my head a reality? It's been incredibly fun, a lot of it because of the community of people that I've met, particularly in Kerry, through being an artist and going to exhibitions and gallery openings and like meeting all of these fantastic people and seeing the way that they bring things to life and how they take their ideas and make something physical out of those ideas. It's been hugely fun in that regard to be part of that community of people.
So what is it about her art that appeals to Cathy so much?
What appeals to me so much about painting is the emotive elements of it. As a very gestural painter, I can go into the studio, I can start something, and when I look at the painting afterwards, I can identify all of the various periods of emotion that I went through while I was making it, purely from brush stroke, from gesture. All of that just creates this, it's a medium that is incredibly good at being almost a form of therapy.
There are a variety of skills and techniques that are used in Cathy's work.
So there's a couple of different skills involved when you paint on canvas like I do. The first step for me is usually assembling the frame for my canvas. And then following that, I stretch the actual canvas over the frame, staple it. I prime it 3 times. It can take me a couple of days to complete even just making the canvas. So I like to make a lot of them in advance so that when I feel inspired to do a painting, that I don't have to spend 3 days stretching canvases and that the idea has left my head by the time the canvas is physically ready to paint on. Then when I move on to the actual painting, I usually start my underpainting in acrylic. And once that's complete, I can decide whether I want to proceed with acrylic for the full painting or whether I want to switch to oils once the acrylic has dried. My favourite thing about acrylic painting is that you can use the paint in a nearly sculptural way. If you build up layers thickly, you can create all kinds of swirls and ridges in the paint that I think lends itself well to the kind of paintings that I create. Build up a lot of interesting tones on flesh and muscle simply by using a palette knife or a brush as though you were sculpting something out of marble. Building up the layers of paint, sweeping them back and forth.
Over time, Cathy has learned to hone her skills.
Before I went to LSAD, I had never even heard of stretching a canvas, so I had no idea how any of that worked, and my early canvases were complete failures because they were incorrectly primed. The end painting would look terrible because it was painted on a bad surface. So that is kind of the fundamental, is putting together a really good surface on which to paint. And then when you move on to creating the painting itself, for me, the biggest challenge was always the initial drawing, as I'm much more of a painter than I am someone who likes to draw. So I had to put a lot of work into actually figuring out drawing and capturing of like human anatomy and of scale, basically all of the fundamental aspects of creating a painting. They all had to be worked at really for a long time before I was ready to create something I was proud of.
Cathy uses a variety of tools and materials to produce her work.
So what I use are wooden stretchers, which form the frame that the canvas is then stretched over. The canvas, obviously. I use a lot of palette knives and such for mixing and building up paint, and then dozens of brushes in every size and shape that you could possibly imagine, because every brush you use is going to let you do something a little bit more different when you're creating the painting. I work in mostly acrylic, and I have recently started using oils more frequently in painting, and it's really great if you can sort of master both kinds of paint, because they'll both do very different things for the painting. And I think having the ability to diversify the materials that you're using can really make your work stand out a little bit more.
Cathy's studio space is unique and allows her to create her wonderful paintings.
My studio is probably the noisiest studio on earth because of the tin roof and the continuous rain and the frequent visits from sparrows that have been nesting there in previous years. The most important part of my studio is my white wall for working on, but also displaying all my paintings so that I can reflect on them afterwards and see everything in a space that kind of mimics a gallery space to a certain extent. Then at one end of the studio I have my table where I set up canvases that I'm too afraid are going to fall off the wall essentially if I hang them up there, and I work in that corner among countless jars of water, among countless jars full of paintbrushes. I have way too many paints. There's an entire plastic box on the floor that's just full of paint. It's a mess most of the time, but I find that I create better in a messy environment than in one that looks like a surgeon's office. So in my studio currently, you see the white wall here, and you see all of my work lined up on it. And it's really great to have that space to give me a sense of how my work would actually look in a gallery environment. So I have most of my newest paintings, which I'm trying to really increase that use of vibrant colour, flesh tone, just this really, really saturated amount of colour. That's been the focus with these pieces. Then I have my table over here where I'm working on new pieces right now. I have about a million paintbrushes over here, and then everything else that I need, palette knives, paints, and of course the heater, because painting in an uninsulated shed in winter can be not much fun. I like to read different books about artists that would be an influence on my work. The most books that I have are about Francis Bacon, one of my favourites of all time. That sense of pure mortal torture that he was known for. That kind of torment of the human body, and also the use of space, in that the painting almost feels like a stage set that he is placing a human and various objects in. It feels like almost setting up a film set where every item needs to have a relevance and needs to have a reason for being there. They've definitely been a big help to me, and it's good to, when you reach a point in a project where you're not sure how to continue, it's good to look at what the people that have influenced you and have inspired you are actually doing, and kind of trying to think, okay, how can I look at this work and let it inform my work without necessarily trying to do the same thing that this person was doing.
One of Cathy's favourite pieces is a painting called Tents.
I have one painting named Tents that I completed a couple of months ago. It is one of my favourites because it encapsulates everything that my artistic practice is about, really. This interaction between the human body and the space that it inhabits. All of the physical techniques I like to use in a painting, the heavy application of acrylic, forming different shades of muscle and skin upon the body, and then this metallic red background of the walls closing in. It just, for me, it's the peak of what I create, and it's representing everything for me about what my paintings are about.
So what is Cathy currently working on?
At the moment, I just finished a painting that I had been working on and off for 3 years, which was fantastic because it was definitely one of those moments where you turn something against the studio wall and you think that you're never going to go back to it. You think you're going to disassemble the canvas and end up scrapping the entire thing. But I finally finished it. It's another study of the human body within a tense kind of atmosphere. And for me, it's another one that encapsulates a lot of what my artistic practice is about. At the moment, I'm looking at returning to another older painting that I did not finish. This few months has kind of been my time of going back to older pieces and looking at them with fresh eyes. So I'm hoping now to complete the next two unfinished paintings in my studio that have been abandoned for a while.
That's the first part of the episode with Cathy Cronin, Tralee-based artist, and we'll hear the second half of that after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan's.
Now let's return to an artist's kingdom where we're featuring Tralee-based artist Cathy Cronin. So what are Cathy's future plans?
What's in store for me at the moment is countless emails and countless applications to things, any of which I hope will result in anything at all. The dream for me is to have a solo exhibition. I'm working to try and make that happen, but obviously that's a very difficult thing to acquire as an artist. Particularly your first one, I think, is very difficult. But with any luck, I'm going to continue applying to galleries that are offering this opportunity and just keep up hope that eventually one will let me put on a solo exhibition within their space, because that would be, for me, a massive milestone.
And for aspiring artists, Cathy has this advice when applying to galleries.
It's hugely intimidating to look at an application, particularly for bigger places that want you to break down budgets and do all of the scary stuff with the numbers that artists really are naturally adverse to. But I would say just do it, because the more people that you get your name in front of, the better. And at the beginning, it really is 100 rejections and one acceptance, but eventually I think you just have to make people so sick of seeing your name that they'll let you into an exhibition just so that the name doesn't land in front of them again. That's my piece of advice, just pester them.
The use of colour in Cathy's paintings is hugely important to her.
Colour is very important to me, because when I first started painting, I was creating a lot of very grey, washed out, sad kind of paintings that felt weak and a bit ineffective. So towards my last year in LSAD, colour became a focus for me, in that I decided I don't want making these sort of ghost paintings anymore. I want a vibrancy, and I want to capture that aspect of the flesh, an aspect of an almost unreal, vivid body.
Another thing that fascinates Cathy, and this in turn influences her work, is the random objects people have in their home.
I think I'm always fascinated by the objects that people choose to surround themselves with, and I noticed through years of living in different student apartments and such that, like, the same vocabulary of objects would be present between different places. You could go to anyone's apartment and you would see candles, you would see lava lamps, you'd see ashtrays. And it was interesting to me, that element of what do people want to live alongside, because I think there's a huge reflection of who someone actually is when you walk into their home and look at what they've chosen to surround themselves with. And because my focus is a lot of how does the body interact with its environment, it's important to also look at what does this person choose to live amongst. I've always loved this aspect of kind of kitsch and of maybe plastic gift shop type items. I find there's something very fascinating about, when you look at it on the level of the topics we have today about consumerism and mass production, etc., and then you look at the way people want to put their own stamp on a space they're living in and how they might do that and how the items that they find, they connect with them. So it's, for me, it's important to have that repetition, because you see that repetition so much in real life when you go from place to place. You go from, like, friend's house to friend's house, and you're seeing what does this person want to surround themselves with. I love this idea of a kind of a decaying opulence, and of things that would be considered luxurious but also maybe in bad taste today. This idea of this might have been very fashionable at one time, but now it just looks strange and out of place and a bit alien. That's been a huge thing for me, is trying to find a way to work these references to, like, a past opulence into my paintings.
And how did Cathy develop her own unique style of painting?
I think for most artists it's continuous evolution, and you're constantly, you sort of develop your style when you're not really thinking about developing a style, when you're just thinking, okay, what do I want to paint and how do I make the kind of paintings that I want to make, as opposed to what I think I should be making. And that's when your style as an artist develops, in my opinion. So for me, it's a constant evolution of just painting what I want to paint and seeing how other people respond to that.
When Cathy is painting bodies, it is important to her that she captures reality and not perceived perfection.
I think even though I paint in a semi-abstract way, it's important for me that the body looks like a body and not a mannequin. That you have this idea of flesh, you have this idea of contorted poses and everything else. And I also think that the most stereotypically perfect body is often the least interesting one for a painter, because all of these perceived imperfections are actually a fantastic opportunity for any painter on a technical level to really hone their craft and really practice capturing that idea of flesh and of shadow and everything else.
Learning to replicate the imperfections of bodies onto canvas proved difficult for Cathy in the beginning, but in time she honed her craft.
Initially it was a nightmare because I was putting too much emphasis on doing it absolutely perfectly, but once I figured out how to combine the sense of abstraction I work into things with that tension between reality and abstraction, it became really fun. It became something I absolutely love doing, and while it is head-wrecking at times, I think that is the nature of painting for any painter, is this idea of, I hate this, but it's really fun.
And if you want to find out more about Cathy Cronin, where should you go?
More information is available on my Instagram account, CathyCronin_artist. All of my paintings are photographed there, and any exhibitions that I'm involved with.
Cathy Cronin there. And I want to thank Dervla, her sister, who helped out with that. And Connie Broderick and I produced that series, An Artist's Kingdom. And we'll have another episode when I return after Christmas. And a reminder of Frank Lewis's programmes over the Christmas period. On Saturday, December 27th, there's a new programme he did, Jeannie Tagney, My Special Places in the Black Valley and on Clarney's Upper Lake. Jeannie Tagney was holding his nine-month-old granddaughter, Roisin Mary, in the home farmyard, the hub of the Tagney's sheep farm. As he told me, one day 14 white-tailed eagles perched here, and at another time, two red stags bellowed all night. So that is Saturday 27th. And also, there's four repeat programmes. Friday, December 26th, St. Stephen's Day, support for 31 years of Sister Mary Lucy's work in Zambia. And on Monday, December 29th, Sneem Digital Hub now has 11 full-time and 60 part-time clients. On Tuesday, December 30th, Walking in Pikewood, Killarney. And on December 31st, Wednesday, that is New Year's Eve, Bishop Bill Murphy, My Special Places. And that is Frank Lewis, always does a fantastic program. That's all we have time for on the program this morning. My thanks to all of you who tuned in during the year, and for our fantastic listenership figures. That's all down to you. So thanks a million for tuning in every Saturday morning to the Saturday Supplement. And thanks for all your texts and calls during the year for different occasions, for the sad and for the joyful ones, and for just getting involved in the program. I really appreciate it. I'll thank all the contributors who contributed so wonderfully to the program as well. And of course, where would I be without Abigail Bernard on the desk? Does a great job there. And oftentimes Niamh Daly fills in there as well. So I want to thank her. And I want to wish all of you, like I said, a very happy Christmas and a happy new year. I'll be back again the first Saturday in January with the Saturday Supplement. Have a very happy Christmas and a very healthy and prosperous new year. Hopefully 2026 will bring you all good things. That's all we have time for on the programme. Francis is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry. Until I talk to you again, look after yourself and
the Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.